Hey everyone, I'm Sam.
And I'm Sean.
And this is Key to the Case. Welcome back. Thank you all for joining us this week. And a special thank you to our listener, Jada, for suggesting today's case. I'd say with most disappearances we've covered, if we're being realistic, the victim is most likely no longer alive. This case is a little bit different in that it's quite possible he is alive and out there not knowing his true identity. All right, let's jump right in. Donna Thompson Green was just 16 years old in 1978 when she was preparing to welcome her son, Raymond Lamar Green Jr., into the world. Now, Donna was already a mother. She had a daughter about a year before when she was 15 with her boyfriend, Raymond, who was 4 or 5 years older than her. And yes, their baby boy was also named Raymond. He was named after his dad. She was excited about having a baby boy, yet she was nervous. Being a parent is a huge responsibility, and there are certainly challenges that come along with being a teen parent specifically. Donna's mom was not happy with her pregnancy. Her disappointment was clear. Regardless, Donna was committed to giving baby Raymond and her daughter the best life possible. On November 1st, 1978, Donna gave birth to her son at Grady Memorial Hospital in Atlanta, Georgia. This was just a few minutes away from her home. It was a rather smooth and fast delivery, and just a few hours after he was born, Donna peered through the nursery windows where Raymond and all the newborn babies were. From my research, babies aren't sent to a nursery within the hospital with such frequency today. It kind of depends on the hospital and individual circumstances. But in the 70s, babies were routinely taken to a centralized nursery where the nurses cared for them in those early hours and days post-delivery. As Donna admired Raymond from a distance, a woman approached her and introduced herself as Lisa. Lisa told Donna that her sister had just given birth to a baby girl and she was resting in her hospital room. She even pointed to one of the babies in the nursery and said that was her niece. That baby had the last name Morris, so Donna at that point thought this woman's full name was Lisa Morris. Lisa inquired about which baby was Donna's, so Donna pointed out Raymond and they continued their conversation. Donna described this woman as being in her early 20s with dark brown eyes, smooth, light brown skin, full lips, and possibly a mole on her left cheek. She stood about 5'5" or 5'6", was wearing a short dark leather jacket and a bandana or scarf that was quite tight on her head. Donna really couldn't see any hair poking out from the bandana. Donna described Lisa's personality as kind and non-threatening, the type of person who garnered immediate trust. They continued the conversation at the nursery windows for about half an hour until Lisa offered to accompany Donna back to her room to not disrupt her sister, who was apparently resting.
It seems like there's somewhat of a lack of social awareness on Lisa's part. Since Donna just gave birth, did she not think that she would want to rest just like her sister?
Right. If I were Lisa, I would feel like a nuisance in this situation. I've never given birth, but I would imagine in the hours after that, I wouldn't really want to be chatting with a stranger for really an extended period. But Donna didn't seem to mind. So Donna said, yes, you can come back to the room. And once they were in Donna's room, Lisa asked question after question. She asked Donna where she lived, if she was excited to be a mom, what she would do when she returned home with her baby, and so on. Donna was not suspicious of Lisa's questions. She thought they were just getting to know each other and that she might even be making a new friend. Although it sounded like the conversation centered more around Donna than Lisa, Lisa said she lived nearby, but just didn't supply many personal details at all. They watched I Love Lucy together for a bit until Lisa departed for the day, but it wasn't long before Lisa returned. She came back the next day and continued to inquire about Donna's life. Lisa left, but in the early morning hours the next day, Donna awoke from her sleep when she heard movement in her hospital room. Donna saw Lisa in the darkness, either emerging from the closet or trying to hide in the closet. Donna didn't get a clear look at exactly what was going on because she had just woken up and it was dark, but Lisa was near the closet and the closet door was open when it hadn't been before. Donna rustled around in her bed and asked Lisa what she was doing, but Lisa told her to be quiet. She just came by to see her and to go back to sleep. And Lisa sauntered out of the room.
That's so weird. And at this point, it's getting to be borderline invasive and creepy. I guess not even borderline, it is.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, right, I don't even think it's borderline anymore. Yeah, this is very bizarre. And at the time, Donna thought it was somewhat odd, but didn't think too much of the situation. In hindsight, she said she can't believe how naive she was. I mean, there was zero reason Lisa should have been in Donna's hospital room. And with how much Lisa was lingering around, it is interesting she didn't catch the attention of anyone who worked at the hospital.
You might be getting into this later, but did Lisa actually have a sister that just gave birth?
We will get into that later. Yes, we do know the answer to that. It should be noted that Raymond was not in the room with Donna at that time, but Donna believes Lisa thought Raymond would be in the room. Donna was discharged from the hospital the following day, November 3rd. There's conflicting information on who exactly came to take Donna and Raymond home because Donna can't 100% remember, but it's not a salient part of this case. As they prepared to leave, Lisa suddenly appeared in Donna's hospital room. She saw they were about to leave and asked if she could hitch a ride since the person who was supposed to give her a ride had already left, and they said no problem, they could give her a ride home. Donna and Raymond were dropped off first. Donna lived at home with her mom in an apartment within a public housing development called Carver Homes, which has since been demolished and replaced. This was just a few miles from the hospital and was on the way to where Lisa was headed. So it made sense for Donna and Raymond to be dropped off before Lisa. After Donna and Raymond were dropped off, Lisa then asked to be dropped on Stanton Road a few minutes away, but she asked to be dropped off on a corner, not in front of a home, and she began walking when she got out of the vehicle. So to date, we don't know where she went after she was dropped off or she even lived in that area at all. Donna spent the next few days caring for Raymond and her daughter while trying to rest and recover from the delivery. Donna thought she would most likely never see Lisa again. Yes, she enjoyed Lisa's company, but it wasn't as though she expected to maintain a friendship with her or to even cross paths with Lisa again. So when Lisa unexpectedly appeared on her doorstep on the afternoon of November 6th, Donna was genuinely surprised. Lisa had clearly clocked where Donna lived on that drive home just a few days before. Donna questioned how Lisa got there since she didn't see a vehicle outside when she opened the door, and Lisa explained that she had just taken a bus to get there and wanted to check on Donna and Raymond. Donna felt conflicted. She thought Lisa showing up uninvited was strange because they hadn't known each other for very long. At the same time, she appreciated the concern from Lisa, and with how young she was and how exhausted she felt, she leaned into that feeling more than the former. Donna invited Lisa in, and they chatted for about an hour. Now, Donna's 18-year-old brother, Tony, was home too and was watching over Donna's sister's newborn baby boy. That's right, there were two newborn babies in this home at that time. So Donna saw an opportunity to take a quick shower and asked her brother to watch Raymond while she did. But Tony didn't realize that Lisa was not an established friend of Donna's. If he knew that, maybe he would have reacted differently when Raymond started crying. Lisa offered to take Raymond outside to soothe him, And he thought nothing of this and dozed off with the other baby in the living room. Donna was only showering for a few minutes. The sources vary on exactly how long she was away, but a lot happened in those minutes. Raymond started crying, Lisa took him outside, and Tony fell asleep. I have to say, Tony falling asleep so quickly is pretty remarkable, but he said it was a cold day, they had the heat on, and the newborn was curled up on him. So I guess that created an environment where it was easy for him to fall asleep in no time. When Donna entered the living room after showering and noticed Lisa and Raymond were not there, she woke Tony up and he explained what I just explained. Donna sprinted outside in a panic and Lisa and Raymond were nowhere to be found. She knew then that Lisa had kidnapped her baby. Her neighbor was outside and told Donna she saw a woman with a baby come out of Donna's apartment. Then a brown car pulled up with the male driver, at which point Lisa and the baby got in the passenger seat of the car and it sped off. Donna reported the abduction to the Atlanta police immediately. She gave them all the information she had about Lisa, and the minimal investigation they did determined that Lisa, as I'm sure you all expected, was not who she said she was. There were no patients at Grady Hospital who had a sister named Lisa, nor were there any women in Atlanta named Lisa Morris who fit the description from Donna. So this woman's true identity remains a mystery to this date. She even told the police about the mole on Lisa's cheek, and they said, oh, you know, she probably just penciled that in. Despite Lisa not being her real name, for the rest of this episode, we will refer to her as Lisa. The police did very little to investigate. They basically told Donna that Raymond had most likely been sold to someone outside the United States. To make matters worse, there was only one news article published at that time about Raymond's abduction. That came from the Atlanta Constitution. A child abduction should be big news. When I research cases that are this old, it's usually not too difficult to find contemporaneous articles. But yeah, in this case, there was just this one short article buried deep in the newspaper.
That's really disappointing that only that one small article buried in the newspaper was published about this case, because you, with this sort of situation that's going on, you need to get the word out rapidly and to as many people as possible.
Right. This case is unique in that we have a really good description of what Raymond's abductor looked like. There are cases where a child is abducted and no one knows what the abductor looks like. So, like you said, had they spread this information early on, they could have garnered a lot of information, a lot of tips from people out there, but that wasn't done, unfortunately. And you have to get to people before their memories fade, because someone could have seen Lisa, Raymond, and whoever was driving that brown car show up somewhere in maybe a relevant area. And if they didn't know them, they could have just forgotten about this, right? So you have to get to people while still fresh in their memory. Donna said being poor and Black didn't help her situation. And as a 16-year-old, she didn't know how to advocate for herself, but she shouldn't have had to advocate for herself. Donna has participated in many interviews in more recent years, and she's been asked if she ever blamed her brother, Tony, for what happened because he was supposed to be watching Raymond. But Donna explained that she didn't blame Tony. She blamed herself because she let Lisa into the home, and Tony thought Lisa was Donna's friend. Sadly, Raymond's dad, who was Donna's boyfriend and Donna's mom, blamed her. Donna told the Atlanta Constitution, quote, "I didn't have anybody tell me it was going to be okay or to hold my hand. I had to figure it out on my own, how to be normal," end quote. And your heart breaks for Donna because there was no one to comfort her through this horrible experience. Instead, she was mostly blamed. So for a long time, Donna felt immense guilt and shame and didn't talk about what happened much because of those feelings. Then, a month after Raymond was abducted, the family faced another tragedy when her sister's baby, the one Tony was holding when Raymond was taken, died of sudden infant death syndrome. So that is a lot for one family to experience, especially at the same time. In 1979, a year after Raymond's abduction, the Atlanta child murders began and lasted until 1981. During that time, approximately 29 Black children, teens, and young adults, mostly boys, were kidnapped and murdered. Raymond's abduction was not connected to the Atlanta child murders, but it certainly became a focus for their police. So Donna was thinking if they already weren't doing much to investigate Raymond's kidnapping, then they probably had even fewer resources to put toward his case at that point. In August 1981, almost 3 years after Raymond was born, a baby girl was kidnapped from Grady Hospital just hours after her birth. The baby's mom saw the kidnapper and worked with the police to develop a composite of her. This composite was then distributed all over the city, and about 6 weeks later, a tip brought the police to the home of a woman who resembled the composite. And sure enough, the woman named Louise was identified as the woman who abducted the baby, and that baby was in her home. They identified her through a blood test, matching her footprint to the footprint of the kidnapped baby and by a distinctive birthmark on her back. Thankfully for that family, the baby girl was reunited with her mom and Louise was arrested. This kidnapping drew Donna's attention, of course, because it was a baby kidnapped from the same hospital she gave birth at where she met Lisa. And the police looked into if Louise could be responsible for kidnapping Raymond. She did have a 2-year-old son who she claimed was her biological child, and Raymond would have been 2 at that time. So this had to be explored. Louise was 26 when she kidnapped the baby girl, so not too far off from how old Lisa would be in 1981, based on Donna's estimates. However, when Donna saw what Louise looked like, she thought there were similarities between Louise and Lisa, but didn't think it was her. The police compared Raymond's footprints that were on file from the hospital to the footprints of Louise's alleged son. The police said there were gross differences in the footprints, and after receiving a birth certificate for the boy from his father, they felt satisfied with the conclusion that he was not Raymond and he was Louise's biological child. What a wild coincidence, but the kidnappings tied to Grady Memorial Hospital didn't stop there. Between 1978, starting with Raymond, until 1996, 7 infants were abducted who had a connection to Grady. All of the abducted infants were Black and kidnapped by women. Fortunately, of the 7, 5 were found and reunited with their families. So one other remains missing besides Raymond.
I'm assuming Donna was aware of these other cases where the babies were found and was asked if any of these other women resembled Lisa, right?
Right. And no one ever stuck out to her as possibly being Lisa. And she spent enough time with her that Donna thinks she would know if she saw Lisa again. She said she would even find herself forever basically searching in crowds and wondering, could that be Lisa? And never seen anyone who matched what she remembered. But the tricky thing is, we don't know if Lisa even stayed in Atlanta after abducting Raymond. I'd be curious to know, going back to, had the police done more in the beginning, she was dropped off on Stanton Road. I don't know exactly where, but if they canvassed that area, they could ask people, and I think you'd need to spread out pretty far from there, but asking people around there, do you know anyone who looks like this? Because maybe she did have a connection to that area. Maybe she got dropped off just a couple blocks from where she lived or something. So yeah, there were a lot of missed opportunities here, but no, Raymond's abduction was not connected to the other abductions.
I guess to play devil's advocate a little bit, I would think that Lisa just got dropped off somewhere random and then took a bus to wherever she was actually living. So, you know, because she had this plan in mind and she was intending on kidnapping Donna's baby. So why would she get dropped off close to her home where following the abduction, there would obviously be a police presence, I'm sure, right?
Yeah, she could have just gotten dropped off on some random street. I don't know if there is public transportation near that road. I mean, I would assume it would be close enough to where she could walk to go get on a bus somewhere. But yeah, definitely possible that she just got dropped off on some random road. But I think she had familiarity with Atlanta to even say, drop me off on Stanton Road. She had to be at least somewhat familiar with that area. So what would drive someone to abduct an infant? The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, or NCMEC, reviewed and analyzed more than 500 non-family infant abductions that occurred between the 1960s and 2018, most of which were resolved with the baby being reunited with their family and the kidnapper apprehended. They learned through their analysis that among non-family infant abductions, the majority, or 62%, were carried out by lone women of childbearing age for maternal reasons. They wanted to raise the baby as their own. Now, the specific reasons vary. Some had difficulty conceiving, while others lost custody of their child or even experienced the death of a child. The next largest group of non-family infant abductions, about 11%, occurred in the course of carjackings, instances where someone stole a car without realizing a baby was in the back seat. Obviously, that wasn't the case here. And then retaliation was the motive in 7% of these abductions. These abductors were trying to seek revenge or punish the infant's parent, typically the mother, which we know wasn't the case here either, since there was no relationship between Donna and Lisa. If you were keeping track, that doesn't add up to 100% or account for all the abductions in their data set. So I presume of the remaining abductions, the motives varied too much to be neatly categorized. And in some cases, the motive was likely unknown. So in Raymond's case, the majority might apply since the other two categories can be ruled out as the motive. Understanding Lisa's motive feels important because it could be a clue to someone who knew her back then. The good news is that if Lisa abducted Raymond and raised him as her own, then he is most likely still out there somewhere. But that raises so many questions. Lisa didn't have his birth certificate or social security card. So how did this work out logistically? I know it happens. People are abducted as infants and then raised by their abductor. So Lisa could have obtained a fraudulent birth certificate and worked from that. I don't know. But someone who is willing to kidnap a baby is willing to deceive in a pretty dramatic way. So obtaining fraudulent documents would probably be no big deal to someone like that. And I'm not just assuming that. NCMEC has studied child abductors and found common traits among them. And they found that these abductors often rely on manipulation, lying, and deception. As the years passed, Donna never forgot about Raymond or lost hope that one day they would be reconnected. She and Raymond's father, who was her boyfriend, split up after his birth, but they reconnected 12 years later, married, and had 5 children. So in total, they had 7 children since they already had a baby when Raymond was born. Donna was an overprotective parent. How could she not be? She was often plagued by stress and worry about what could happen to her children. And how do you comfort someone who had their baby abducted? That's something, that's a parent's worst nightmare. And she actually experienced it. So it would be hard to tell her, oh, there's nothing to worry about. Something like that would never happen because it did happen to her. Her overprotective nature didn't prevent her from having a wonderful relationship with each of her children. Raymond's father and Donna's husband died in 1999 without answers. In 2003, 25 years after Raymond's abduction, Donna wanted to revive the case. She visited the Atlanta police in an attempt to obtain a copy of the original police report. Much to Donna's surprise, the police could not find the report or any information related to Raymond's kidnapping. And because they had no record of it, they treated her as if she were losing it and that her child was never abducted. Donna had to provide the one article written about Raymond's case in 1978 to get them to take her seriously. The police admitted that any evidence or record of Raymond's case had been lost. They have said they can't explain how it was lost, but that their retention policies have enhanced and changed since 1978.
So was she kind of expecting that they were working on it a little bit in the background and it wasn't necessarily a cold case by then?
Yes, she knew not a lot was being done, but she still figured that the way Donna described this is that the way she saw it on TV and in the movies is like they're working nonstop to solve it. So she thought the police were still investigating or following up on tips or leads, even if she wasn't aware of it. So to find out they had no record of his disappearance or his abduction was shocking to her. They had to restart the investigation 25 years later, and this renewed investigation failed to produce new leads. Although over the years, there have been various tips from men who thought they might be Raymond. A man in Belize thought he could be Raymond, so a DNA sample was taken from him for comparison to Donna, but it was not a match. Then a man in Germany learned of Raymond and Donna's story and instantly felt a connection. He was brought to Europe in the late 70s from the United States, and having been abandoned by his Spanish mother at age 11 and with no record of his birth, he thought he could be Raymond. And I said mother, he knew this woman as his mother, but clearly he believed she was not his biological mom. Donna and this man were in communication after he made the possible connection. And while they waited for the DNA test to be completed, they formed a bond that they've maintained since then, despite the results of the DNA testing showing that this man was not Raymond. So there have been tips like this over the years, but they haven't found the right person yet. Donna has submitted her DNA to all of the popular ancestry sites, which has yielded no results thus far. However, she encourages anyone who questions their origin story, so to speak, especially if they're a Black man in their late 40s today, to submit their DNA to the ancestry sites because that could be how Raymond is finally identified if he's still out there. The Atlanta police have also entered Donna's DNA into a federal database to no avail. In 2008, 30 years after Raymond's abduction, Donna turned her focus to helping others. Donna had a career as a drug counselor, so she had already spent much of her life helping other people, but specifically, she wanted to be a resource for people who were going through a similar experience. Whether they had a missing loved one or a child who was abducted, Donna was of assistance. So she started the Raymond Green International Outreach of Hope nonprofit, and their focus is primarily cold cases. Donna does not investigate these cold cases, but she helps spread the word because she knows more than anyone how important that is. And there is no guidebook on what to do when your child is abducted or your family member is missing. And I'm sure Donna could have used something like that. So she helps families based on what she has learned over the years. NCMEC has developed age-progressed images of Raymond starting at the age of 25. There are no photos of Raymond out there, but even if there were, he was 5 days old when he was kidnapped, so it wouldn't be that helpful. So the forensic artist met with each of Donna's children and studied images of Raymond's late father to develop these age-progressed images. Donna has other sons, so she was able to say that Raymond looked most similar to one particular son when he was born. So I think there was an emphasis on that son. Some people look nothing like their parents or siblings, and we have no idea how much Raymond weighs or his hairstyle or if he has any scars. So it really is a lot of guesswork, and we don't know if this image is accurate, but it's better than having nothing to work from. We will have the latest age progression image of Raymond on our Instagram at Cue the Case Podcast. And we'll also be sharing a sketch that was developed of what Lisa looked like in 1978 and the updated version that a forensic artist from the GBI developed 31 years after Raymond was abducted. When Donna saw the sketch, she felt angry because it looked just like how she remembered Lisa, and she was transported back to that day in her mind. But again, with age progression and working from people's memories, there is guesswork involved. In 2023, NCMEC partnered with GSTV, a national digital video network, to distribute a short video about Raymond's kidnapping at gas pumps nationwide. Now, this was already being done, but typically they would feature multiple missing person cases at gas stations, and they were usually specific to the region the gas station was in. But for 2 weeks, Raymond's story was exclusively featured at 28,000 gas stations. They hoped to reach 50 million people with this tactic. This was a creative strategy to spread the word in a case where if it's not going to be solved through a DNA match on an ancestry site or some other database, then it's going to be solved by reaching the right person. So this seems like the perfect case for this kind of strategy. As far as I could find, there were no significant leads after this, but it's certainly a step in the right direction. And this case is particularly tragic because I found myself thinking that, like we talked about, if only the news of Raymond's kidnapping had been widespread when it happened, maybe Lisa would have been apprehended and Raymond would have been back home, because Lisa was not pregnant and she would have suddenly appeared with a baby. That couldn't have gone unnoticed.
I suppose she could have been pretending to be pregnant. You know, obviously not in front of Donna, but in front of other people that she knew, you know, just to make the story a little more believable when Raymond showed up out of nowhere.
Yeah, if this was something she had planned out, I definitely think that's possible. And it could have led to a sense of urgency, because if she had been pretending to be pregnant for 9+ months and there was no baby yet, she would know that she needed to get a baby to follow through with this fake pregnancy she was carrying out. So yeah, I do think that's possible. And that wouldn't cause so many alarm bells to go off, right? If she were pretending to be pregnant and then she appeared with a baby and was no longer pregnant, then yeah, maybe people wouldn't have thought anything of that. Lisa was someone's neighbor. Lisa was potentially someone's coworker, someone's family member. If that description of her, or if a sketch was made back in 1978, I think this case could have been solved. We also know she had an accomplice. According to Donna's neighbor, the man who drove off with Lisa and Raymond. So who is that guy and what was he told? Was he in on it just as much as Lisa? It's just baffling that Lisa hasn't been identified yet, but I think it's just because of the length of time and the lack of awareness at that time. Thankfully, security has changed and improved at Grady Memorial Hospital and hospitals across the country since 1978, making it much more difficult to do something like this than it was back then. And I know Raymond wasn't abducted from the hospital, but other babies were. And Lisa shouldn't have been able to roam around the hospital without credentials or a family member who was admitted. Something else I just thought of is that did Lisa, I'd want to know if Lisa interacted with any other moms at the hospital like she did with Donna, or did she just start talking to Donna and latch on to her from there? Because if she wanted a baby, you would think this wasn't her first shot at getting one, at kidnapping one. At least you would assume that her first time attempting this, she wouldn't be successful, but maybe she was. But if she wasn't, there could be someone who remembers Lisa trying to talk to them and ask questions about their baby. It's time for this to be up. I mean, if Lisa and Raymond are both still alive, Raymond would be turning 47 this year. That would be nearly 50 years that Lisa got with Raymond. 50 years she took from Donna and Raymond Sr. Donna is in her early 60s now and wants nothing more than to be reunited with her son. If you have information in this case, please contact NCMEC at 1-800-843-5678, or you can call Crime Stoppers of Atlanta at 404-577-8477. Thank you all for listening today. That is all for this case, but we will be back next week with a new episode. Bye.
Bye.